Hey folks, I'm Tom.
And I'm Vince.
Welcome to Friday Night Beers, a show where two guys who know too much about pop culture and not enough about beer try some beers and explain them in a way that you may understand.
But that you probably won't, and it'll only make sense to us. Either way, we hope you'll be entertained.
Vince, you're looking pretty good today.
You're not looking so bad yourself, Tom.
And you might be able to look at us for once.
We don't know.
You're or not. I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, this could be a total disaster, but we are experimenting with film, people.
And we hope that it's not a sham and that you guys hop to our content.
Yeah, in your traditional Irish reds.
That's right. Let's put that all together. We're drinking a beer called Sham Hop Irish Red. It's our third St. Patrick's Day episode. It's the biggest weekend of the year as far as I'm concerned, Vince.
And for many people, this episode marks the anniversary of our butchering of Sláinte.
Yeah, that's right. Which we're not going to do that this time. We've learned our lesson, but just to give you a brief recap, in the past we've reviewed Guinness on this time slot in the year. Last year we did Maggie's Irish Ale from Saugatuck, and we felt it was only appropriate to do another Irish-themed beer, specifically a red ale.
Now, we wanted to do Killian's, and we've wanted to do Killian's for quite some time, but as you've discovered, it's not as easy to get as we think.
So we're pivoting. We're doing Sham Hop Irish Red. Let me tell you a little bit about it. It's from a place called Tangled Roots Brewing Co., in Ottawa, Illinois. As we mentioned, it's a red ale. They describe it as such: want to increase your luck? Sip on this delicious Irish red ale. Sweet caramel malts that are balanced with a delicate earthy hop to create this luck of the Irish in your can. It's pure gold, so keep your can close by or a leprechaun may just steal your beer, Vin. And there's no need to search for the end of the rainbow. It's right at your fingertips with Sham Hop Irish Red Ale.
Wow, fantastic. I will not do one because I know mine gets very bad very quickly.
And there's supposedly, if you finish this can to completion, which we may or may not do, there's a surprise on the can. We'll have to let you know about that. But Vince, I don't want to wait one more second. Why don't we crack?
Let's crack this Irish Red Ale.
Yeah, let's see how it sounds.
Cheers.
Cheers to you, Vince.
Because everyone can see it now.
I didn't even bother sipping it. Ooh, yeah. Dude, that's really sweet. Holy shit.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
The caramel is heavily pronounced.
Thick.
Yeah. But I'm liking it. I like how it tastes.
Lots about Tangled Roots, if I may dive in. This is one of the more interesting, I think, breweries we've done in a minute. They say, from the start, our goal has always been to make sure great beer and food can be enjoyed by as many people as possible, whether or not they consider themselves foodies or beer connoisseurs. That's why our brewmaster pays as much attention to the lighter, fresher brews as he does to our award-winning IPAs and winter porters, making sure we have a wide range of taste to appeal to everyone. So they've got a lot of, I guess, very fruity, very cloud-based. It's a little marshmallowy, but they're inspired by nature around them, and they often like to say, embrace your nature. Phrase is more than just a tagline. It's everything we are, everything we do. Here's where things get interesting, because they are Illinois' leading brewer of farm-to-foam beers. Do you know what farm-to-foam beers are, Tom?
Absolutely not.
It's pretty much farm-to-table, but farm-to-beer. It's their commitment to farming locally, and they grow hops and barley right down the road from their flagship brewery in Ottawa, Illinois. They are famously used, these specific hops, in 4188, and it comes from CL Hop Farm, which actually has a 100-acre corner called the Tangle Roots Hop Yard, owned and operated by Tangled Roots. So they're very serious about this, right? They are taking farm to table and they are applying it to beer. They also have Survival of the Fittest, which is a program for their very micro batch new experimental beers where their customers get to vote on it, and the ones that are voted are, you know, kept and moved into production. And lastly, they also have the Lone Buffalo, which is their first restaurant and the home of their original craft brewery. So they're seriously invested in Ottawa. I did get really deep into local politics on Ottawa and found out that Ottawa is seeking to become the new Galena.
Oh my gosh. So, are they looking for someone to run the town? Can you run for office?
I don't want to, but it seems a little far out.
Yeah. When you said survival of the fittest, I thought about 1 year my high school's football team. The slogan was only the strong survive. I actually want to go back even further in the history realm to talk about the origins of the Irish Red Ale, which okay. I'm embarrassed to say that I did not know about
before. No, I to be honest, I didn't know much before we did the research either.
Yeah.
I kind of got red ales confused. I thought it was just another name for ambers, which is apparently a very American thing.
Yeah, well, as usual, we were dead wrong about something. But yeah, so it is the Irish Red Ale. It's a style of pale ale that, as we noted, usually uses a lot of Kilned malts, a roasted barley, which gives it its red color. It's typically on the lighter end, which we should have mentioned at the top. This is only 5.2%. So in the United States, Irish Red is often confused with, as you mentioned, the amber ales. Not the case. These have been brewed since the 14th century. This guy named St. Francis Abbey made it in Kilkenny City, and they kind of have perfected it over this time. The most famous one being Smithwick's, which I have not had, but that's been around since 1710.
I will provide a small correction, not just for your benefit, for everyone's benefit, because yeah. I've made this mistake in public. Uh-huh. I asked for a Smithwick's, and they laughed at me. Apparently, it's Smittick's.
Smittick's.
Smittick's. And I'm like, where's the D's?
I'm just embarrassing myself left
Throw
and right.
Throw some D's on that bitch.
Throw some D's on I can do that.
Listen, since 1990, I have been putting my foot in my mouth so that you don't have to.
Vince, I'm enjoying this beer. I don't know about you.
It's pretty solid. And I have had a Killian's, but it has been years. I don't know that I've had a Killian's legally, to be perfectly honest.
I don't even know if I've had one. But, you know, this is when we've done like this type of show before, we've talked about like the history of St. Patrick's in this town, our personal relationship with it.
Not this time.
We're not doing that.
Not this time.
We're going to focus on other stuff. And something that you pointed out, which I loved that you did, was the immediate first word is sham. And you put in our notes, sham wow.
Sham wow. It's like it's the guy and his name was Vince. Look at that. You spill cola on your carpet. Look at that. That's going to get all the way underneath. That's going to be awful. You get a sham wow on there. Bang, bang, bang. Flip it over. Bang, bang, bang. Look at that. All the cola comes up. He's the only person that's ever called Coke Cola.
Probably because he didn't have the rights to say Coke in the commercial.
Oh.
Could be it.
I didn't even think about that.
I didn't know his name was Vince, and I looked up his Wikipedia page, which is a lot of fun.
Tell me about him.
He's known as the Sham Wow guy, but he actually was...
The Slap Chop, too.
He was a screenwriter, but way before that, and he was mostly known for suing people in Hollywood for supposedly stealing his ideas. His first lawsuit, he sued the Farley brothers for their Something About Mary because he claimed they used, and I quote, 14 scenes from a story he wrote. They said it was completely baseless, and believe it or not, Vince, this was a theme in all of his lawsuits.
14 scenes?
So this guy basically was like, I'm going to just try to tell people that they ripped off my idea until they pay me. Then he took that sham to the literal sham wow world and blew up. And his life was going pretty good until he got arrested.
Drug addiction.
Yep. He got arrested. He beat up a prostitute, which is definitely not funny. But it is just kind of a crazy end to the run.
I mean, can we talk about beating up a prostitute and what like a 1990s crime that is? Like what a 1980s, you don't do that anymore.
No.
That's like, I feel like Grand Theft Auto beat that to death. No pun intended.
It seemed like you intended.
Like that's literally everyone got to, it's crazy because stealing cars is still hella fun, but apparently we all got it out of our system in the video games, which is a point for the video games, I guess.
Well, in doing this, I decided to look up some other famous infomercial people, and let me see how many of these you remember.
Billy Mays.
Billy Mays was number one. He did a bunch of stuff. Rest in peace, that guy. Tony Little, you remember the Gazelle
machines? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was good. How about Phil Swift, the Flex Seal?
Phil Swift here for Flex Seal. Like, literally could not have picked a more memorable and worse match for a product and a spokesperson.
That's one of my favorite memes, is when he's just like slapping duct tape on a hole and it's like someone's like solution to a problem. It's like, this will be good.
He paints the bottom of a boat with a screen in it. It's like, what is the use case here?
Yeah, I think the one I liked the best was like, corporate culture is terrible. No one's getting paid well enough. Then it's just like pizza on Friday.
Yeah. Why not?
George Foreman was another famous one.
Yeah. George Foreman, though, like, I mean, that's his product.
Yeah. He's not a guy you hire to do that. He just decided to do it himself.
He's also like, if you... The George Foreman grill is the most perfect product of all time that's been developed by a celebrity, because you look at it, and the sheer amount of like engineering and thought that went into it can only have come from a man who's been thoroughly beaten in the head throughout his entire career and paid for it.
And all of his kids are named George.
Are they really?
All of his sons have the same name, George.
And you know what's crazy is everyone bought it. I had a Foreman grill.
I had one. Yeah.
Michael Scott burned his foot on a George Foreman grill. Like, it's popular and it's insane, because what he said was, I don't like the fact that I don't get to press the meat on both sides. I don't like how long it takes. I have to flip it. I shouldn't have to do that.
It was great for making paninis as well. So you like,
which is
that.
Not what it was used for. Like,
oh, definitely not.
I feel like if you used it to make paninis, George Foreman would find you in an alley and beat you senseless.
He'd be like, you pussy. Make
no,
a burger.
You hooker.
A couple other ones you may remember. Richard Simmons, of course, was a big deal.
Okay, so is he an infomercial person technically? I always thought he was a gay fitness savant.
Well, he was both. He later became an infomercial guy, but he became famous for being the gay fitness dude.
Was he? He also is somebody who I think everyone assumed was gay, and then he like came out many years later, and people were like, "What?"
I think it was like a George Michael situation where it's like, we've known for a while.
Yeah.
But how about Billy Blanks? You remember him, the Tai Bo guy?
Okay. Yeah.
My mom had a few of those tapes. New one, the MyPillow guy.
Oh wow, the Trump supporter. He's the business owner, though. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, it's like there's a separate category of like the Billy Mays types that they just were like hired guns. We'll sell whatever and we'll do it with enthusiasm.
Absolute mercenaries for TV products.
Yeah. Why do you think infomercials have like kind of died off?
Well, here's the question. Have they died off, or have they just gotten so good at imitating real commercials that we think they don't exist anymore?
I have a hot take on this. I think that influencers have basically replaced infomercials.
Oh.
So, like, instead of the, you know, 6 in the morning, 30-minute, you know, infomercial where you're like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to get kind of sucked in, they've now just, like, disguised themselves into people, you know? Like, you see someone on Instagram, you're like, oh, this person seems kind of hot, they're cool, and then suddenly they're like, hey, you know what's really cool? Skin cream. Or like some like random protein drink that you don't know shit about. So like, I think people kind of got wise to the infomercial's shamelessness. So they had to like take a different route. But now it's like just as shameless.
But I mean, the thing that I appreciate about the infomercials is that they went over the top. Like, have you ever seen somebody I would pay to see a movie. Like if they had a scene in Free Guy where... like it was just infomercial town and nobody could do anything. Like, have you ever seen someone in an infomercial try and handle an egg? It's the most absurd. It's like they slipped or something. And then it's like when they're trying to cook it, they basically just like smash it on the counter and they show a person going, oh, I can't believe this happens. And that's somehow an advertisement for nonstick pans.
My favorite one is the Snuggie one when someone's like, undoing a blanket and they do it with such like disdain, like as if that's like an egregious, like, oh my god, I have to like fold this blanket mildly over my body. I wish it was just draped on me constantly like a Jedi robe.
But now you have 24-year-olds saying, get ready with me, I'm a 24-year-old, and they're always working in finance, a 24-year-old successful businesswoman in finance who's going to show you how I get ready in the morning. And it's like, I start at 3:45 a.m. and then by 6, I have my dog
walked.
Or
they take you through a day in their life and it's like, so I go to an office and then sometimes I have a glass of wine after work. And it's like, you're the coolest fucking person I've ever met.
My favorite take on those are the ones where they go, I live in a $2.5 million penthouse at age 26. Here's how I did it. And then someone goes, trust fund.
let's take this into the glass, Vince.
Why not? We'll take it in the glass.
Yeah, so we're obviously talking infomercial stuff, but it is still an Irish themed beer. And
what do you think an Irish infomercial is like?
Oh God. Do they have like a potato gun that they can sell to people?
hey, that's offensive.
I can say it.
Okay, no, speaking of, is Lucky the Lucky Charms mascot offensive or a fun caricature?
Wow, that's a tough one because like I feel like the general idea of leprechauns is maybe offensive to some, but it's also like a symbol of Irish culture.
What, like, why is leprechaun offensive?
I think it's more of like the context, right? Like if you're talking about like an old Irish tale or like if you go to a Notre Dame game and you see the mascot, like I think that's fine. But it, like if you assume that everyone in Ireland like talks like that and is wearing a top hat looking for a pot of gold, that's probably offensive to some, right?
I mean, sure, but then like where does it end? Tony the Tiger could be very offensive to Tigers fans everywhere. The positivity coming from that man, they're great. Guess what, Tony? No, they're not.
I think you could generally say cereal mascots are so silly it would be hard to be offended by them.
Like, my favorite is like, we are missing out. And I don't know if it's just because I'm not watching TV as much anymore, but I remember cereal commercials being the most out-of-pocket things in the world. You had, was it Honeycomb, where people would literally turn into this bug-eyed furball that was basically like some sort of genetically modified chipmunk screaming, Honeycomb! What was the other one? Crunchitize Me, Captain? Mm-hmm. He would literally turn you into his cereal.
How about the Trix Rabbit? Those kids just were torturing him.
That's a case study. That's the Stanford Prison Experiment of cereal commercials.
How far can we push this man?
Yeah.
And it's like, Trix is the modern day Book of Job. You know, God's just like, how can we punish this poor soul who just wants to drive?
This rabbit's been having sex before marriage.
That's why he's like, you fucking pussy rabbit. You're trying to procreate.
It's just so insane because like it's a beautiful psychological study in mob mentality because not a single one of those kids is like, wait a minute, should we maybe leave him alone? Like maybe he's just trying to provide for his family.
Yeah, you never know why he's in such a maybe like he's got a gambling debt, you know? They're like, if you don't give me some fucking tricks, your family's going down, Trix Rabbit. And also, his name was Trix the Rabbit, but he couldn't eat the tricks.
Good for him.
I'll tell you what.
Good for them.
We kind of had like a Predator meme situation going on with like really unhealthy cereals and parents willing to buy it without like thinking twice about it until they introduced Cookie Crisp. Like that was just the one that broke the code of this is just straight up dessert.
Cookie Crisp was produced in, well, I think, was it mass produced or was it limited quantities?
Oh, it was available constantly.
Okay. Cookie Crisp walked so that Oreo O's could run.
I never even had that.
Oh, man. Talk about a delicious but really terrible for you cereal.
Yeah, but like the other ones, like they at least had the veneer of like being kind of
healthy.
They
turned them into like a little Cheerio, an unhealthy Cheerio.
Yeah. I also love that like they would be like part of a balanced breakfast, which apparently includes a full glass of milk and orange juice.
Yes.
And you have milk in the bowl and there would be a whole orange next to it. It's like, what part of this is balanced or healthy?
You have to have the orange and the orange juice to offset the damage you're doing to your body with the famous Amos cookies that you're just pouring into your bowl.
Right. You're literally just having a bowl of cookies for breakfast.
That was so insane.
It really was obscene.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Vince, the other thing I wanted to mention is this episode is coming out on the Ides of March.
Whoa.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of fond memories of the Ides of March?
As a direct descendant of Julius Caesar, I most certainly do. How dare you? How dare you bring that up so casually?
Well, what can I say? It's a day I think about.
My ancestor was betrayed by his best friends, mind you.
And you, Brutus? We had to memorize that monologue from the Shakespeare play about Caesar, the Et tu, Brute?
It was Et tu, Brute? Asher Perlman did a comic in The New Yorker recently for the Ides of March.
Yeah.
And it's Caesar with all the stab wounds and everybody standing around him. And he goes, have you guys been hanging out without me? It's so funny.
One of my favorite tweets ever, it's some random guy. And it's like, I can't believe that Julius Caesar has been dead for over 70 years. And all we have is a salad named after him. And the top comment is, I hate that this is factually correct, but it just makes me so upset. Well over 70 years. Yeah, add a couple thousand to that, buddy.
For well over 70 years.
I'm going to start doing that. It's like, well, Abe Lincoln, as we know, he's been dead for over 30 years.
Over a decade now.
Yeah, add a little bit to that. There's also a movie called The Ides of March. Have you seen this with Ryan Gosling?
Filmed in Ann Arbor. If I'm not mistaken.
Did it really?
I believe so, because it's Clooney as well.
Yeah, Clooney is a guy who's running for president, and Ryan Gosling is like an ambitious political campaign consultant on the campaign.
So it's like, it's maybe like 10 years from being real?
Probably, yeah. I mean, do you think George Clooney could win the presidency?
I think so. I think he very well could. And to be honest, I think that Ryan Gosling could very easily, coming off of his big wins as Ken, where he basically took a movie that wasn't for him, wasn't about him, and became the star of it.
And somehow was the talking point for everything.
Yeah, he could change. He could change the paradigm.
Yeah, I watched it in college, and I wrote a paper on it for extra credit, so I was happy about that.
About watching it
about
or writing
the
paper?
It was about the movie because I was in a journalism class, and it was about like how the news reports on political... Well, you don't believe that I was a star journalist back in the day?
No, I'm just picturing them asking you to do a simple review of the movie and you doing this absolute takedown piece.
Oh, I actually liked the movie quite a bit. It was good. Where I got in trouble in that class was when we were learning how to write obituaries.
I would
have a sarcastic slant on all of them. So like, they were like, write an obituary about a guy that died from an electrocution shock. I would start it with, in a shocking turn of events.
Oh, God.
And the guy was like, hey, listen, like, these are pretty...
You got to tone it down.
These are pretty straightforward. You can't be doing... You can't be doing that stuff.
Because this is like a very Happy Gilmore scenario, yeah, where the nurse's aide is selling all of the arts and crafts. That journalism teacher was definitely... shipping these off to papers and getting paid for them.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he was.
And
yeah,
he caught hell for that one.
Yeah, the Columbia Missourian was like, what is this? This guy died.
It just happened to be like a prominent member of the Columbia elite.
Vince, before we give us a score, what are you doing for St. Patrick's Day?
Well, I'd love to invite you to our party tomorrow.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Please come.
I went to the one last year. You guys did a nice job with that.
Thank you. We'll be reusing many of the favors that we purchased.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to start my morning at the parade, as I often do.
That's right.
My buddy, shout out to the Door family. We've been doing it I've been doing it for almost 20 years. They've been doing it longer. We get to be in the parade. We get to walk around. It's a lot of fun. I wear my shirt with my last name on it, so when I die, people know who I am. So yeah, I can probably stop by after that.
Yeah, I think we'll probably be starting well after that ends. If I remember, I believe you invited me one year. It might have been last year.
Yeah, it starts early.
Yeah, you were like, I said, oh, that sounds fun. And you're like, yeah, we get there at about 7:30. And I was like, no, that doesn't sound fun at all anymore.
And it's always cold.
Yeah. I'm not that Irish.
Well, I am, and I'm ready to give this beer a score. So
yeah.
I would have to go back and like think about my relationship with red and amber ales, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go with my gut, and I'm going to say that this is a 3.5 out of 5 Toms.
Yeah, that's pretty generous.
Yeah.
I liked it. I didn't hate it. It's definitely better than Maggie's. Maggie's was not for me.
Yeah,
last
we didn't,
year.
That was a little too sweet for my liking.
But as far as this goes, like the themes that I'm picking up here are, hey, this is not an amber, right? And I don't think it necessarily tastes like one. I don't think this is what I imagined an Irish red tasting like. I'm going to give it a 3.25 out of 5 Vinces. I'll probably have the other two because they're in my fridge. But I don't know that I'd go out of my way to get this again.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm saying that necessarily, but what I am saying is, like, if you're in the spirit and you are looking for a good Irish red ale, I think this is going to get the job done just fine.
It's like the Ides of March. Yeah, I'd be happy to watch it for a school project, but I'm probably not going to do it on my own.
And hopefully no one stabs you in the back afterwards.
Or the front. I mean, I think he was perforated many times.
Generally, being stabbed anywhere is not great.
Yeah, but if you're going to get stabbed, where would you want to get stabbed?
I think probably like in the leg where it's not like my artery.
No, right in the ass cheek.
Ass cheek?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't
like
I
dead
really
center, dead center, right in the meat.
All right, that's probably a good one too.
I mean, you could probably get like a 4-inch blade in there if we're being honest.
Depends on how big of cheeks you got going there. Yeah,
I think you overestimate how long a 4-inch blade is, or maybe I'm underestimating.
Let's not talk about inches on this show.
Okay.
But this has been a lot of fun. We hope you guys stick around and check out some of our other episodes. Subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on social media. Enjoy St. Patrick's Day if you're in Chicago. But until next time, I'm Tom.
I'm Vince.
This has been Friday Night Beers, where we have clear eyes, full cans.
Must booze.